This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Everyone's been a little bit under the weather so far, yeah. I found.
Yeah. Really?
We're fine. Everybody like those journalists?
Yeah, I normally... Round tables are normally raucous affairs.
We're very raucous.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, first question. Have you ever done bad dinner theater? You were good, but I mean, it was bad.
No, but you know, we don't have dinner theater in the UK, and I think it's a great idea. I would love to be able to eat during the theater. But I've never done dinner theater.
So you didn't bring that to your performance of the bad dinner theater?
Oh. No, I've never been to dinner theater. Not yet.
So how do you think that'll translate worldwide, that effects on American phenomena?
Well, we all have to get used to American phenomena, don't we? So like, I'm sure they'll understand it. You know, dinner theatre, it's just one thing. You know, it's like sorority. We don't have sorority, or we don't have first grade. We don't have tons of things that come over in American culture. So.
So what it was like to return now for the third time?
It's great. It's the best job to have, to be honest. It's like I feel it's like a golden handshake because I've kind of been half retired, and it's a job that you can do anywhere in the world, wherever you are. You know, you can be in Poland and they'll hook you up, via satellite to the studio in LA. It's the state of the art of it. I mean, you've seen all this one is so beautiful looking. It's unbelievable. The sea tones, the color, how they've done water, the skin tones, the magic hour, the kind of dusk shots with sun rays. It's just sensationally beautiful, and in that respect, it really is a pleasure to take part in, because you know every time you go back, they've done something else, and they've got such an attention to detail, that you know it's a brilliant job. You know, it's not impossible job. Maybe if you were an actor starting out and you'd be a bit nervous just being, because you're on your own acting, you don't have anyone to go with, you have to come up with the performance straight away. There's no rehearsal, and you know, you don't investigate who your character is or that, you have to come up with it, and that's rather like riding a bicycle. Once you learn how to do that, you can do it, and at that point it's just really, it's a great job. It's a really great job.
I was saying, knowing how many years that they work on this, how much did the script change? I mean, obviously your character was always the central antagonist and the villain, but was it always the same storyline? Was it always like the same?
They don't change the storyline. They kind of, you sometimes go back in and they've reworked something, and they refine, I think, rather than change. It's so carefully thought out. That's what's nice. You know, in the old days when cinema, filmmaking was less expensive, filmmaking was done like that too. People would think about every frame of a movie and design and costume and this and that. We can't do it anymore because films are so expensive, and mostly you don't have enough money for that. Occasionally, Spielberg, for example, you see a Spielberg film, the reason they look so extraordinary, I think, is because he has the money to have an attention to every single little detail, and most films are a bit more of a kind of, you know, they're rushed. And this is like that. They think about everything in it, and it's a pleasure to be part of.
Was that you singing in this? And did they tell you to please not be very good?
The character is
What are you talking about? I was doing my best.
One note was excruciating.
Well, it wasn't in my register.
But did you have fun with that, doing this?
Yeah, it was really fun. It was lovely. It's great, that song.
Did you have to do it several times? Or
Several days, actually.
Oh,
we did it one time, and then I went and did it again. But no, it was great to have a song. And he's a very funny character, really, because he's a villain, but he's hopeless, really. And he's also somebody who, you know, he just never gets his chance in life. And he's just been brought up wrong, in a way. He's been spoiled too much. I think he's... he's been spoiled a lot, and he's kind of weak, and he just thinks that everything's going to come to him naturally, and it doesn't. And then he tries to make it come to him unnaturally. So in one sense, I have a lot of sympathy for him. You know, he never gets his chance.
That's true. Well, they're going to be making this into a musical. I'm just curious, would you have any interest in doing a musical version of this?
They are making it into a musical?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, Broadway. Julie Taymor is directing.
Who is?
Julie Taymor.
Who's that? No, I didn't. No, I don't think I could. You have to be very good vocally to sing in a musical 8 shows a week. I wouldn't. I would collapse after the first matinee.
You seem to be pretty enamored of the animation in this film. Are you a fan of animation in general?
I love animation. Yeah, I think. But I love animated films. I think they. I think they shed more light on society than live action does. Really, to be honest, I think. Shrek and The Simpsons and South Park, I think they tell you much more about the world than Made in Manhattan or, you know, Mission Impossible, really. Live action doesn't seem to tell you anything real because it's all wannabe characters and fantasy relationships and political correctness, I think, has really dwarfed
cinema.
Why
do you think that is? That's an interesting point. Why do you think that is?
Because political correctness means you can only smoke a cigarette if you're the villain, right? Now, we know that that's not... There's good people. I mean, I'm not pro or against smoking, but you could be a saint and smoke. But you can't be in a movie. That's just one example. But political correctness means that nothing can happen that doesn't have a moral outcome. It kills cinema dead. Because then everything becomes, if you have a couple... everything has to make a moral, for example, two kids in love. Everything has to come up with some moral tie-in so that it's acceptable politically. And it's totally uncreative.
And animation gets away with the gadgets.
For some reason, particularly in this country, I mean, if you look at animation, it's so much more edgy than anything that you wouldn't be able to do. You wouldn't be able to have someone fart in the bath in a live-action movie. It just wouldn't happen. But for some reason, where we stand one step back from a cartoon or something, I don't know what it is.
Because the premise is comedy, maybe?
I don't know, because in comedy, well, we have very far out comedies as well, I suppose, in live action. But they go even further. Mm-hmm. You know, you get something about Mary, where you've got, like, you know, sperm in the hair, which is kind of it's 4 or 5 degrees further, mm-hmm. and it doesn't really. They don't have the same profundity as something like this, because this does tell you about our culture.
It's social commentary.
It's a social commentary, this, whereas that is just, you know, fantasy. But I don't think real live action, as it did, you know, in the old days, it doesn't really hold the mirror up to society very much anymore.
Well, and you'd mentioned South Park, which can take something from a headline on Monday and put a show up the following week and have it.
Well, you see, that's the other thing that's very difficult for live action cinema and, you know, things like Shrek, where we're a lumbering machine in a way. We can't come up with a response to what happened last week very easily.
Now, you had a different director with the new director with this one. Did you feel like maybe you knew more about the character than he did? But he was on the other side.
I always feel that. I know than the director, so that's nothing new. No, he's really nice. And they've both been very nice directors to work with. It's really fun working on cartoons because you have to enlarge everything slightly that you say. And it's a very good lesson for acting, actually, because when you look at a cartoon character acting a scene, mm-hmm. there's not one emotional beat in the image it's all there. He goes, everything is a little bit larger than if you were acting in a live action movie, and it's fascinating, actually, because they don't miss out on one emotional beat of a sentence. And so when you're acting the voice, you have to kind of draw it out to be the same length as cartoons, and it's really good. It's very interesting for acting, I think. Cartoons can teach you a lot about acting.
You mentioned you can record your dialogue anywhere. So where did you record it for this film?
This film, I was... I think I've been in Hong Kong. I've been in Berlin. I've been in London. I've been in New York. I've been in Los Angeles.
Wow.
So what's it like recording Shrek 3 in Hong Kong?
It's all done by satellite. So you're on with them on satellite.
But... You mentioned that, you know, they can do it anywhere, but when you call and tell them, or, you know, however, converse and say, by the way, I'm going to be in Hong Kong, is there ever a pause where they're like, shoot?
No. No, because it's understood that you have to make it.
They have to make it work.
You have to make it work.
Oh, okay.
Either you have to come back or they'll make it work if they can. Most of the time they want to be with you. So only kind of towards the end will they do it by satellite.
Have you seen yourself become more of Prince Charming over the years?
In my life? No, I don't really identify myself. I identify myself to a certain extent with Prince Charming because, you know, the film is an allegory about Hollywood. And I guess, you know, it's all about everyone getting their happy ever after, i.e. kind of getting their career. And, you know, I think we all feel that we're cheated out of certain things sometimes. So I feel kind of sympathetic to him like that. He goes in the wrong direction with it. You know, he gets it, life makes him angry. And I think that's a very sad thing because life does often make us, you know, furious. But again, that's very profound in the movie. You know, what makes an insurgent? What makes normal people into the villain? I think it's a really good film in that sense. It does. It has a childish area to it, but it has something that kind of works on you on another level, I think, in a way.
When you're in the booth working, did you just have the script in front of you, or does the director say something like, "Okay, you're on the stage, you're riding a stick horse"?
They show you a kind of a big storyboard of the scene.
Oh, okay.
That they've written out each scene, and so you know what's going on.
Okay, so you don't have to listen to them feeding stuff into your ear all the time.
They do. You read the scene with the director, and they play the other parts. But you've had an idea from the storyboards. Okay. Yeah, you know what's going on.
So have you been shooting things like such as in Hong Kong and so forth, and that's why you've been traveling all over the world, or what have you been up to lately?
Just now, I've been making a film, and before that, I've been I wrote a book, an autobiography. So I've been kind of around the world promoting that. Mm-hmm. And before that, I was writing it. Mm-hmm.
You're in Stardust,
cathartic?
Though, aren't you?
And I'm in Stardust. Yeah. I was in that.
Can you tell us a little about who you play in that?
Or? Stardust is a movie about a parallel universe that's next door to the real world, and it's a really good film, I think, made by Matthew Vaughan. I play a character who is pushed off a rooftop at the very beginning and becomes a ghost. And it's got some great performances in. I think it's one of Michelle Pfeiffer's best performances because she becomes really old in it, like 300 or 400 years old. And
that's
really
old.
She's amazing. She looks incredible.
Even at 300 years old.
She's just very, very good acting.
What is the time period? What is the time period?
Oh, the time period is kind of, I should say, kind of 19th, 18th century. You're not quite sure when it is, to be honest. But it's kind of, I guess it's kind of 19th century, early 19th century takes place in. It's a great story.
If you're playing a ghost, was the style that you were like on green screen, or are you?
It's all green screen.
It's all green screen?
Yeah.
It was
so boring.
Hit, so, yes.
So boring. I mean, I've never been so bored in my life. I've been bored, and that was my most bored ever. Standing in front of a piece of green screen like in a studio is. Some people do it for months. Mm. I only did it for a few weeks, but it does really get you down.
Did any of your co-stars who were seeing you not in green screen come and actually do the lines with you, so you didn't just have to do it?
No, because a whole lot of us were dead. Every so often, someone else died, and then they can't join this horrible green screen. What happens with green screen, the worst thing about it is it just takes forever, because you're doing the green screen, but the scene has been shot years ago, so there's all these little dots where this bit happens and then that bit happens. I mean, you're so bored you can't concentrate on what anyone's saying. And then you get everything wrong, and they have to stop and say, no, this happens there, and you have to look at that bit, then you have to move your eye over to there. I mean, it's really, it's as boring as it gets, I must say.
But it's a whole different experience when you actually see the movie and they put it together.
It's love. It is amazing when you see the movie.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Oh, what did you think when you saw those scenes?
It made me laugh. You know, you can't. It's difficult to take seriously a movie when you've been through that kind of. But you can't really look at a movie you've been in anyway, much, with any kind of. You're always remembering what happened that day when you were doing the thing, whether it's green screen or anything. Mm-hmm. I think it's difficult to look at a movie and say, "Oh, this is great," or get carried away by it or anything like that. Really.
Now, what about something like this, or like an animated movie? Do you look at it the same?
Yeah, I mean, apart from when you first hear your voice with the character, then you kind of get used to it, and then you just enjoy the movie. I mean, I went to see this one yesterday and just enjoyed it, really.
What film are you working on now?
I'm doing a movie called St. Trinians, which is a remake of an old English movie, series of movies about an English girls' school that we're remaking.
And did you enjoy the writing process, your book? Did you enjoy putting the book out?
Very much, yeah. Not so much putting it out. I enjoyed writing it.
Yeah.
Putting out is, you know, selling books is harder than selling movies. And it's very, you know, it's really difficult to get a book moving. And you have to promote a lot. And I think it's just selling books and bookshops and all, just getting used to that was quite tough.
Yeah, but the actual writing process,
you know? I loved it, yeah.
What is the book about?
Me.
Was it cathartic?
Actually, it's not really about me. It is an autobiography, but it's really about the times I've lived through, to be honest, more than myself.
Why did you decide to do it?
It just came about, really, by chance. I'd written a couple of books before, novels, and I'd always meant to start writing again, and I made friends with a journalist, and she started encouraging me to write down some of the stories I had. And I did, and we went to an agent, and he took me to some publishers, and then it all kind of just happened. And I wanted to take some time off from acting, and it was a really good kind of punctuation point, in a way. I wrote it during the course of about a year and a half, and I travelled a lot writing it. And it's a great, when you're used to acting, which is a job you do with lots of other people, and then you're writing, which is a job you do on your own, I really loved that, and I travelled around the world and stayed in little hotels and places and wrote in the mornings and, you know, did fun stuff in the afternoons and stuff, and it was really nice. I loved it.
What's it called?
It's called Red Carpets and Other Banana Skins.
Oh, that's a great title.
Thank you.
I hate to admit that I don't remember what happened to your fairy godmother in the last film, but I didn't think she died.
She did die.
Oh, okay. Because that's why I wonder why she wasn't in this one. I was surprised, because you kept looking at her picture longingly.
I know. I was trying to bring her back.
She kill off the character.
I know. No, she was a great character, too.
I know.
Did you voice the character for Shrek the Hall? I think it's called the Christmas movie that's coming out.
The little special.
Yeah.
Okay, so you didn't already do that. You already recorded everything. Okay.
Yeah.
I seem to recall the lead character in the Dylan Dog comics was patterned after you. I know that. I think they're working on an animated feature. Are you involved with that at all?
They're working on an animated feature.
Yeah.
Are they?
There's a company doing an animated feature.
Really? No, I didn't hear about it.
But what's that like, having your likeness in a comic book? And is that something you want to do more of?
It was good. We made one film from it, actually, called Della Morte, Della Morte. And we were going to make another one, but I don't know, never got off the ground. It was great. It's been great for me in Italy, you know, because they're mythic comics, those comics. Mm-hmm. People love them.
Do you read them yourself?
I have done. They're great. I'm not a great comic reader, to be honest, but they are great comics.
Is there a chance you could return in Shrek 4 or after, possibly?
Yes, there's a chance. No. There's always a chance.
Is it going to happen, or have you?
You have to wait and see.